from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. This is Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Here is Professor Stu Friedman.
Welcome to Work and Life on SiriusXM's Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. I'm your host, Stu Friedman. I'm an organizational psychologist here at the Wharton School and founder and director of Wharton's Work-Life Integration Project. What we're doing on this show and what we do every Tuesday live from the beautiful campus at the University of Pennsylvania in West Philadelphia is to bring you information from people, really fascinating people who know a lot about work and the rest of life and how to fit them together in a way that works for you, your family, your community and society, and yourself. So what we're trying to do is to help you to become more effective in creating some harmony, integration among the different parts of your life. It's possible to have more of it than you do right now. And on today's show, we're going to be joined by a former presidential campaign spokeswoman and a recognized expert in branding. Her name is Dori Clark, and she's going to help us understand how you can figure out what's unique about you and use that at work and elsewhere to affect a better integration of work and the rest of life. Plus, later on, we're going to be hearing from a psychologist and author of the New York Times bestsellers Raising Cain and Speaking of Boys, it's Michael Thompson. We're going to be talking about how to rein in the costs of hypermasculinity in our society and the macho culture that we live in, and what it means for men, boys, as well as for women and girls in our society, and what it means for our workplaces. Every Tuesday, we come to you live. It's at 7 p.m. Eastern, and love to hear from listeners. So write to us about what you're struggling with, questions that you might have about what's happening for you at work, at home, in the community, and for yourself, and the challenges that you're facing, and perhaps the joys you're experiencing about trying to find some way to bring those all together with a greater sense of purpose and focus in your life. You can write to us at businessradio@siriusxm.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Stu Friedman. That's S-T-E-W. F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N, and you can follow our channel's handle, which is always pumping out really interesting tweets throughout the day. It's Biz Radio 111. That's B-I-Z Radio 111. I am so happy to be welcoming now to our show my very first guest tonight. It's Dori Clark. She is the author of Reinventing You and her most recent book, fantastic book, which I commend to you and we'll be talking about. It's called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. Who doesn't want to learn more about that? She joins us today to discuss how to understand what's unique about you and to use that at work and in the other parts of your life. So Dori, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me.
Stu, thanks so much. Great talking with you.
Well, if you have questions for Dori about how you can develop your own personal brand, there's a method to this, and she's one of the leading experts on how to do it, to reinvent and stand out in the workplace and in other parts of your life. Give us a call. The number is 844-942-7866. That is 844-WHARTON. I'll repeat it. 844-942-7866 to talk with me and Dori Clark about developing your own personal brand. So, Dori, tell us, let's start out with how you just got into this this topic. You started in marketing and publicity, and you use those skills and methods somehow to help individuals now, as opposed to companies, market themselves. What inspired you to do this?
Well, for me, Stu, my first book, Reinventing You, was really the product of my own experiences, because I had had to reinvent myself numerous times, because in the way that the economy has been going as of late, I think a lot of people have experienced disruption.
For sure.
So I was a newspaper reporter, and I got laid off from it. I worked on political campaigns, and we all lost. So I had to reinvent myself, and I wrote a book trying to interview practitioners who had done this successfully to learn about it. But with my new book, Stand Out, I tried to answer the next question, which is, once you find the place that you really want to make your mark, you've found the job you love or the career that you love, how do you actually get noticed above all of the noise and get people to really understand and appreciate your true talents?
And why do you think that's an important topic for today's business world?
Well, I think more and more, this is the form of career insurance that we all need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we live in a world where there's always going to be someone who's willing to do the job for less. That's how the economy is turning. And so you have to give people a really good reason to want to do business with you specifically. The best case you can possibly make is becoming recognized as an expert. It doesn't have to be a world expert, but even if you're recognized as the expert in your company at a certain thing or the expert in your community at a certain thing, that's a powerful form of leverage that you have in negotiation. And it shows people, okay, if I need to pay a premium to work with this person, here's why.
So it's a form of career insurance. And how do you think being able to stand out and develop a following, how does that help people to create a greater sense of harmony among the different parts of their lives and to integrate them better?
Well, you certainly know better than most, Stu, that when you look at psychology studies about what really makes people feel happy and satisfied and like they're having a meaningful life,
mm-hmm.
it's having a sense of purpose in what they're doing. People
mm-hmm.
want to have an impact. No one wants to feel like a paper pusher or someone who's just watching the clock endlessly, having to do tasks that don't really matter. So if you can develop this expert reputation, if you can get noticed for your talents, it enables you to play on a bigger stage. It enables you to have more opportunities coming to you, the kinds of opportunities you want, so that your career can be as fulfilling as you choose for it to be.
All right, let's get into how you do this, because I know that a lot of our listeners are eager to learn. How do you get people to first understand what's really special about them, what they uniquely bring to the table, so that they can find their niche and gain support from others in the way that you've just described?
Well, one of the first starting points, of course, is just beginning to understand what is special and what is unique about you. And I think, honestly, it's hard for a lot of people because
really?
Most people don't know about ourselves.
Wait, I'm sorry, I cut you off there. You were saying we know too much about ourselves or not enough?
Well, actually, I would argue in some ways we know too much, in the sense that we are so far into the forest that we can't see the broader perspective. We are in our heads 24/7, and anything that someone might say about me, I've probably heard, right? But the thing that I probably have very little understanding of is when it comes to the impression that I'm giving the world,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the things that other people think are most meaningful, most different, most salient, I probably don't know that, because a lot of things have equal weight in my own mind. Or a lot of, I might think I'm coming across one way, but for the public, it's coming across entirely differently. So I actually suggest that for a lot of people, if you're trying to get a handle on mm-hmm. what is unique and special about you, of course, you can come up with your own list and have your own ideas. But what's very helpful, and I suggest this in my first book, Reinventing You, is to do a three-word exercise where, for a week, you just go to some friends, acquaintances, and ask them, if you only had three words to be able to describe me, what would they be? Now, this is not a hard question. It takes a minute to answer.
Sure, and just about anybody who knows you can do it.
Exactly.
And they probably find it fun to do it as well.
What they think is really most important.
Mm-hmm. And how does that help you to understand what is distinctive about you, asking that question of friends and colleagues?
Well, before long, you are definitely going to start to see patterns in what people think. And that's helpful because it shows, in a really broad brushstroke, what it is that's most unusual or having an impact with people. I did this exercise. I was doing a webinar with a group of Israeli entrepreneurs recently, and they actually took one of their group members and decided to make him a guinea pig. And they did this exercise where everybody took a minute, they wrote down their answers about him, and then they read them out. And out of 10 people in the room, 7 of them used the word creative to describe the guy. If you hear feedback like that, okay, that's special. That's something that people really think is unusual about me compared to the masses.
Yeah, that's going to persuade you. Hey, if you're listening and are looking for help reinventing your career or branding yourself to get noticed and stand out in the workforce and beyond, give us a call. It's 844-942-7866. I'm with branding expert and author Dori Clark taking your calls. So one method for getting started, which sounds like fun, although I can imagine some people might feel it's a little awkward to ask people to describe you. I mean, do you encounter that where people are saying, I don't know if I feel comfortable asking people to tell me the three words that come to mind when they think of me? Although it's clear that that would be a very valuable thing to do, especially when you ask multiple people and they converge on this one concept like creativity. But do you have to push certain people to get past their inhibitions about trying to do something like that?
You do sometimes, but what I tell people is blame me. Literally say, I was listening to this radio show recently,
right.
And on this radio show there was this woman named Dori Clark, and she said we should try this exercise. So just for fun, I'm gonna ask you, what are the three words you'd use to describe me? Throw me under the bus, people. Blame me. Use me as your excuse, and then you can get the data you need.
That works, because I use that all the time with my students, of course. When I ask them to do, things that might seem a little awkward, I just say, same exact thing. Blame me for forcing you to do this as part of our classwork, and that'll get you over the hump. Okay, so that is actually a very good and practical suggestion. So what if you hear different things from different people when you try that exercise out and ask people to describe you, and eight different people say eight different things? Or does that not usually happen?
Actually is much more of a convergence.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's the case, if eight people say eight different things, then I think that's the point where you begin to step back and, number one, ask, what is the context in which people know you? Is it that really you're manifesting entirely different selves to them? Why do they have such diverse opinions? Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing to probe. Another thing is to ask yourself, are you actually acting in a consistent manner?
Mm-hmm.
It might be worthwhile to really interrogate whether you are sort of shaping your personality to what you hope other people might want or need. We need to go back. I mean, it's important to use other people as a mirror to see ourselves and how we're coming across, but it all comes back to authenticity. You don't want to be shaping yourself based on what they might want or what you think they might want. It's really about getting clear on who you are and making sure that the impression that they are getting is a true impression based on what you would wish them to see in
mm-hmm,
you.
Mm-hmm. That's such great advice. So critical for leadership development and for integrating the different parts of your life and for learning how to stand out. So if you're looking for help branding yourself, getting noticed, standing out, give us a call at 844-942-7866, talking with branding expert and author Dori Clark. Joe's calling from Oregon. Joe, welcome to Work and Life. What is your question?
Hey, I've got a military background, and
mm-hmm.
I've come across this quite a bit, where so much about what I've done with the military and the skills that I bring to the table are so, I guess, logical to me and just normal that I wouldn't know how to even start to explain it, let alone put something on a resume that a civilian employer might understand.
Interesting.
Where would be a good place to start, I guess, translating?
That's a great question. Thank you, Joe. Dori, what advice do you have for Joe?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And this is actually very appropriate because I work with military veterans all the time. Literally, on Saturday morning, I flew out from having just given a speech at Deloitte University in Texas, speaking to a group of 50 transitioning service members who are transitioning into the civilian workforce. I also am involved with a charity called American Dream U, and spoke for them on Fort Bragg last year. So it's a really common question as people are transitioning out of the military and the things that you may have done there. I mean, let's say you flew helicopters or you were disarming bombs. Those are not necessarily things that immediately translate in a direct way mm-hmm. to what you might be doing in the civilian world. So I think a really important point in this is to not let yourself be boxed in. Employers are, I mean, they're looking for a one-to-one correlation, mostly because they don't want their brains to have to work too hard.
When you say a one-to-one correlation.
Well, great, you flew helicopters. What does that have to do with, marketing, soda? And they're completely flummoxed. And so you need to guide them. You need to take the 30,000-foot view and really say, okay, what are my real skills? It's not about flying the helicopters or disarming the bombs. It's about leadership. It's about the fact that you were able to, supervise and safely care for a group of 30 soldiers, or that you were responsible for however many millions of dollars of equipment. If you can drive home that message so that they understand how the skills are transferable, to take the broader view that it might be hard for them to grasp immediately, that can be really powerful.
So it sounds, though, Joe, that you're perhaps struggling with the question of how to make that translation. Do I have that right?
Yeah, definitely, because a lot of the jobs that interest me don't have anything to do with the stuff, like she was saying, the one-to-one translation, the stuff I've done in the past. So what I'm hearing is basically, I guess, stick to the general ideas or principles of what that entailed, not necessarily specifics about flying or shooting or whatever else.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Joe. I mean, in my first book, Reinventing You, I profiled a woman named Toby Johnson, who was, in fact, an Apache helicopter pilot who later transitioned into a very successful executive career at Pepsi. And the way that she was able to do it, when she first went to business school, she thought she was kind of in trouble because her classmates were interviewing for internships. And she didn't really feel like she had a good story to tell. A lot of them had come from other corporate jobs. They could talk about their past experiences that they had before going back to business school. And all she'd ever done was work for the Army. But once she realized that it was about leadership skills. It wasn't about, the tactical elements of what she was doing on a day-to-day basis. People really began to get it. If you can get them away from the line items on your resume and toward the bigger themes of what you've learned to do, that's how you can win the debate in their minds.
Joe, what do you think? Is that a good starting place for you?
Definitely. It'll take a little revamping of the resume, but that's not a problem at all. I was just looking at it too micro instead of not macro enough, I guess.
It's making that translation, as Doria suggested. Joe, thanks so much for your call. And if you stay tuned to the end, I'm going to give you some resources to turn to if you want to learn more about Doria's work and get some more advice from her. Thanks very much for calling. So how can people begin to feel comfortable, Dori, to bring more of who they really are to work, especially when it is perhaps at odds or different from, what's standard or normal in a work environment or a work environment that they'd like to be in? What is different or distinctive, their special passions and interests? What if those cut against the norms or what they think are the norms in a workplace that they want to be a part of?
Yeah, it's a really important point, Stu. So there's a couple of thoughts that I have about this. The first one is understanding the fact that literally, statistically, in terms of studies that have been done, you will actually benefit, your performance will benefit, and your outcomes will benefit by being a more authentic leader. Sylvia Ann Hewlett and her colleagues at the Center for Talent Innovation have done studies specifically about LGBT employees, and they've discovered, perhaps contrary to what many people might expect, that out employees, as compared to closeted employees, actually had greater workplace satisfaction and greater success in feeling like their careers were moving forward and they were getting the promotions that they wanted. And the reason for that, she posits, and I think it makes a lot of sense, is that when you're focused on hiding a certain part of yourself, and this goes not just for gay and lesbian employees, but for anybody, when you're focused on hiding a certain part of yourself, that takes a lot of psychological energy.
Yes.
And it's energy that otherwise, if you didn't have to worry about it, could go to your job.
Of course.
And so that's just part of a reframing that I think is really important.
And it's a topic that we've talked about a lot here with Kenji Yoshino and Christy Smith on the topic of covering and others. And they make the very same point, Dori, that there's a lot of wasted effort that goes into pretending. And if you can eliminate that waste and be yourself, then you have a lot more resources and energy to devote to the tasks at hand. So standing out, it may come with some risk, right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think that there is a certain degree, you could call it, of bravery that's required to do mm-hmm. it, but you will get untold benefits. I actually co-authored a piece in the Harvard Business Review with Christy Smith about mm-hmm. About this, about covering and authenticity in the workplace. And in my new book, Stand Out, I profile a woman named Diane Mulcahy, who she is with the Kauffman Foundation, which does a lot of research on entrepreneurship. And a couple of years ago, they did a study about essentially what was going wrong with the venture capital industry. And Diane came from a background where she was a venture capitalist. So this was highly critical of the industry. And when it was about to be released, she had a lot of people take her aside and say, Diane, this is suicide. You can't put this out. It's like, you know, she's attacking her former colleagues, they thought. But she really felt like this was important information if she wanted to support entrepreneurship and the entrepreneurial ecosystem. She needed to be willing to do it. Mm-hmm. And so she did release the report. It got a ton of coverage, and she did get blowback. Mm-hmm. But if you want to make change, it has to be about the idea. It can't be all about you. And she was willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. And it probably benefited her in the long run by taking a stand for something that she believed in, that she believed was going to be helpful to her organization, to her industry. I'm speaking with Dori Clark, and she's the branding expert and author of the great book Stand Out. If you're looking for help in branding yourself, getting noticed, standing out for who you really are at work and in other parts of your life, give us a call, 844-942-7866. We've got Gabrielle calling from New York. Gabrielle, welcome to Work and Life. What's your question?
Thanks so much. I'm very excited. I'm moving to Philly in a couple of months and will be joining the Warren class of 2017.
So excellent.
Thanks for having me.
Hope to see you in my class, Gabrielle.
Yes, I will be there. I'm looking forward to it.
That is a good suck-up strategy, Gabrielle. I'm impressed.
Yes.
With you and your homework.
Excellent. Already got an A+. Don't even have to show up to class.
I like that in writing.
No. What's your question?
So as I begin my MBA journey, and I'm thinking a lot about sort of recruiting and blending sort of my non-traditional background and trying to transition into consulting, I've been thinking a lot about what my colleagues in my professional life, how they would answer that question, what three words would you use to describe me?
Uh-huh.
And then what my friends and people in my personal life, how they would describe me. And I think that there will be some dissimilarities, and I'm trying to think about how I can sort of like bridge those connections
mm-hmm.
and sort of combine them. Because I think that you're right, having two distinct selves probably isn't going to lead to the best outcome.
Great question, Gabrielle. Dori, what do you think? How do you bridge the divide that you might think is there in terms of who you are, how you come across at work, as well as opposed to at home or with your friends in your community?
Yeah, this is really important. So what I'll say here is that actually a lot of us have been trained to think that, you know, there's this one correct way of being at work, and sometimes that means shaving off other parts of our personality. You know, we're sort of becoming the archetypal man in the gray flannel suit. And what we're learning more and more is that it's actually these points of distinctiveness. It's actually, you know, all of the kind of cool personal stuff that your friends might see that your colleagues don't. That's actually the thing that can make you a memorable, vivid person that people want to be working with. I mean, of course, there's sort of standard things that, you know, that you might do with your friends that you wouldn't do at work, right? Like, you still probably shouldn't swear. You still probably shouldn't, you know, come to work in a hoodie if you want to be a management consultant. But there's a huge category of things that people might think are really irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
But bringing them to the fore is sometimes very powerful. It could be that you're a passionate jazz musician. It could be that you love traveling and you've been to a bunch of countries and, you know, or get fired up about that. But these things that might seem like they're a million miles away from your work actually can lead to mm-hmm. interesting intersections, because a lot of research on creativity shows that the way to really be innovative, to really be a contributor, is to meld together different disciplines, because it enables mm-hmm. you to see the world differently. And I'll actually just mention that for people who want to apply these concepts in their own lives, on my website, doreyclark.com, it's D-O-R-I-E-C-L-A-R-K, I've created a free 42-page workbook that folks can download, which has 139 questions you can ask yourself to think about ways that you can find your own breakthrough idea.
Gabriel, I'll see you here in Philly in next semester. Thomas calling from Texas. Welcome to Work and Life. What's your question?
Hi. Like one of the previous callers, I'm prior military as well. Now I work at a pretty large employer where the work is pretty heterogeneous. We all pretty much do the same thing. And I'm trying to figure out how do you, in an environment where everyone's doing the same type of work, let your own character and work ethic be mm-hmm. shown.
Dory, what do you advise people like Thomas on that question of there's conformity pressures, as there are in all organizations? How do you stand out when the pressures to conform are strong?
Yeah, Thomas, awesome question. So what I would say, if the nature of the work is very similar that everyone's doing, I would actually try to distinguish yourself on an entirely different level. And so what I mean by that is if you can find essentially an extracurricular activity that you can use to stand out and build your brand around, that can be very powerful and also a good way to network, depending what it is. I mean, you know, literally this could be anything with your passions. It could be, you know, being the chairman of the recycling club or leading the, Latino employees employee resource group, or it could be something where you're a fitness buff, so maybe this is good with the military branding. You could launch a jogging club after work or something like that. But by doing things like that, by either starting your own organization mm-hmm. or by organization, it doesn't have to be a big deal.
It could be something small.
Yeah, something small, people together, or taking the reins of something. It shows people that you're a leader, and it shows people different facets of yourself that enables you to stand out.
Thomas, I hope you found that advice to be useful. And again, at the end of this segment, I'll tell you more about how you can find out more and get more support and ideas for how to stand out in a way that fits with the pressures to conform, because that is a challenge for all of us. Kurt's calling from Oklahoma. Kurt, welcome to Work and Life. What's your question for Dory Clark?
I just completed my MBA. I'm graduating May 11th, and I have a master's degree in clinical psychiatric social work, and everybody in my community knows me as a therapist who does trauma work, and I'm trying to rebrand myself and mm-hmm. get out of that profession. And I'm wondering how to do that. That's my question.
Thank you, Kurt. Dory, what advice do you have for Kurt?
Yeah, rebranding yourself is always an important area and an important challenge, because people's perceptions often do lag. So what I would say is one of the best ways to begin rebranding is, number one, to start creating content so that people can actually see with their own eyes that you are knowledgeable in this new field. So if you want to get out of the trauma space and more into MBA stuff, where let's say you're doing business consulting, if you start, blogging on LinkedIn and sharing posts regularly so that your contacts will see them in their newsfeed and they'll say, oh, geez, Kurt's writing all these things about improving business processes. That's funny. I didn't realize he did that. Over time, that begins to sink in. And it also, when you're writing this content, it gives you stuff to talk about at cocktail parties or whatever. You can talk about what you're writing. The second thing that I'll just mention quickly, mm-hmm. in addition to creating content, is it's really valuable to, I will call it, surprise people, sort of snap them out of their previous conception of you. And so this is where it pays to do something big, you know, something visible. And, you know, taking on the leadership role of an organization, you know, you could be the person who is in charge of, business consultants of Greater Tulsa or whatever it is, but something that is just off enough from what you used to do that when you talk to people about it and when they see it on your business cards, they'll say, really, Kurt, you? And it'll give you an opportunity to have that conversation so that they can pivot their perceptions.
Kurt, what do you think? Can you do that?
Yeah, that's a great advice. I think I can do that. I was just trying to figure out how to rebrand myself and get out of that workspace that I was in and try to create a more healthy me. So
I'm so glad you called Work and Life, and I'm glad that you got some value from Dory's advice. We've only got a couple of minutes left here. So Dory, so much useful advice for our listeners. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten?
I think the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten, actually in a really technical sense, is not to have an office. That might actually sound really banal, but because this is the Work and Life show, I want to mention it. For me, it's been a great source of professional satisfaction to be able to work from home. I buy myself an extra hour or two per day, not commuting. And if you're someone that enjoys working from home and you can do it, I highly recommend it. I've worked for myself for 9 years now. I've saved, literally tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on office fees, and had a better quality of life in doing it.
That is great advice. We're going to have to wrap up here, Dory. What's the one most important thing that you want to leave our listeners with in terms of the core message of your work?
I think that the core message that I want to leave folks with is it is more important than ever to stand out. We all live in a world with 1,000 Facebook friends and LinkedIn connections. We all get way too many emails. You have to make sure that people understand what you're good at, in fact, what you're best at, and that message is coming through loud and clear. So it's worth it to invest in taking the time to know yourself and to spread the message to others through the leadership roles you take, through the content you create and things that you write, and just in how you talk about yourself and in your conversations.
Great advice. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with branding expert and author Dory Clark. Really appreciate your joining us tonight.
Thank you, Stu.
For more information about Dory's latest book, Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It, you have to visit her online at doryclark.com. That's D-O-R-I-E, Clark, C-L-A-R-K.com. And you can follow her on Twitter, as I do, where she tweets regularly at Dory Clark, D-O-R-I-E, Clark. Just ahead, we're going to hear from New York Times bestselling author Michael Thompson about how our hyper-macho culture affects boys and ultimately all of us. I'm Stu Friedman, and you're listening to Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School, Sirius XM 111.